Everybody knows the deal is rotten. Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows. Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody.
Welcome to the Lifeboat Hour, May 18th, 2014, where everybody knows. And we are committed on this show to enhancing our resilience in turbulent times. I'm your host, Carolyn Baker, and tonight we have a really good show for you and a fabulous guest with whom I'll be talking in a few minutes. A conversation that I'm sure will stir the pot and hopefully generate some callers as we discuss men, women, and collapse. But before we get into that part of the show, I want to thank all of you who've been sending emails and making comments on Facebook about the show and expressing your appreciation for my willingness to continue the legacy that Mike has left us. And I want you to know that I appreciate all of you, and I'm very excited about what we can create here. I can't continue this show without your support in listening and calling in, and I'm doing everything I can to develop a show where we have a variety of guests and topics that draw more listeners and callers to the show. So let's get on with tonight's show. You know, one of the stories that has been ubiquitous throughout mainstream and alternative news this past couple of weeks is the kidnapping of 276 girls in Nigeria by the militant Nigerian group Boko Haram. This week, the website Alternet published a story entitled, "Outraged by Kidnapping of Nigerian Girls, Four Other Incidents of Mass Violence Against Women You Should Know About." And the story goes on to talk about many other instances of violence against women and how those get ignored by the media. And it reports four other incidents of systematic violence against women, such as the murders of more than 1,400 women in Juarez, Mexico, the murder and disappearance of Native Canadian women, the rape of Haitian women after the 2010 earthquake, and the rape of Syrian women in the conflict in that country. So, in the context of this story, I've invited our guest tonight, Gary Stamper, who, in my experience, is a very integrated, balanced, compassionate man who champions the presence and power of women and the feminine principle. Gary has a PhD in shamanic psychospiritual studies. He's an ordained shamanic minister, a shamanic priest, a certified level 2 Reiki practitioner, a certified shamanic breathwork facilitator, and has a certificate in generating transformative change in human systems from Seattle's Pacific Integral. He's also the author of Awakening the New Masculine, which you can read about at awakeningthenewmasculine.com, and he's working on a second book about transition and spirituality. Gary created and facilitates a men's developmental process called the Integral Warrior. And if you go to garystamper.com, you can read about the Integral Warrior process and a lot of other things on his website, garystamper.com. Gary's passions include creating community and sharing with others how to embody the integral and shamanic consciousness of the integral warrior. He's also the founder and editor of the website Collapsing Into Consciousness. He lives in intentional community in Western North Carolina, where he and his wife work on building and living a life of sustainability, resilience, and service. And you can also follow Gary on Facebook. Gary, welcome to the Lifeboat Hour.
Thank you, Ellen. Wow, was that me you were talking about?
That's you I was talking about. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm really glad to meet that guy.
Well, we're all going to get a chance to meet him.
Thank you for having me on the show, Carolyn. It's always a very great pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure to have you here. Now, you know, you were on the show last year on one occasion when I was sitting in for Mike, and we talked about gender relationships in collapse, and since then, We've witnessed so much violence against women in the world that it feels necessary to revisit this topic. And you sent me a number of key issues that are quite disturbing in terms of men, women, and collapse. So I want us to talk about those tonight, and I want to talk about them in the context of the alternate article that you shared with me. And maybe we should summarize that article first before moving into specific questions. Would you go ahead and do that?
Oh, sure. You know, Carol, the minute I saw the news about Boko Haram kidnapping 276 girls from their school, I was outraged, and I knew I wanted to talk about that tonight. And then a couple of days ago, I saw the alternate article you mentioned about the atrocities committed toward women. And when we were talking about tonight's show, I mentioned it to you and then sent the link over to you. And it really drove home to me about how cheap life is to so many people.
Yes.
That these horror stories exist does not give me a lot of hope about who we are. And right after we got off our Skype call, I saw another article about an 8-month pregnant woman in the Sudan who had just been sentenced to death for apostasy, which is refusing to denounce Christianity in a Muslim country.
Right.
If it had been a man, it would have been allowed.
Right.
But this was a woman, and that is not acceptable. And in all of these instances, mainstream media failed to report the stories until the outrage could no longer be ignored. But actually, there's nothing new about any of this. And I wonder how many of your audience, women included, know that there was a women's Holocaust during the Middle Ages that led to the murders of 68 million people. The majority women and children. You can find out about that atrocity in the documentary Burning Times that you can find on YouTube.
Yeah, that's a wonderful documentary. The documentary of the witch burnings, women, and also some gay men got blamed for being responsible for the Black Plague in that era of extreme ignorance. So thank you for that summary, and let's continue the discussion on the following issues. First of all over the world, we see a rise in fundamentalist religion, and let's talk about the impact of fundamentalisms on women. It's not just Christianity, but fundamentalisms in general, because fundamentalisms of all kinds are inherently male-dominated and oppressive to women. So let's talk about that a bit.
Well, sure. Fundamentalist religion is a pathology of the authoritarian mythic level of consciousness. And that's the same level of consciousness that brought us the Women's Holocaust. And yes, that level of consciousness still exists today. And it doesn't matter if it's Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, Judaism, whatever. Fundamentalist beliefs are all too common to religions where people believe they have the only truth, and anyone who doesn't share their belief are subhuman and that it's okay to kill them. In Christianity, the fundamentalist God is the vengeful God of the Old Testament. And fundamentalism, as you say, is a male-dominated patriarchy, and women are also considered less than men. And consequently, it's okay to treat them badly, to dominate them, to break them, to control them. And basically, that's a defense mechanism born of fear. And all of us experience it in one way or another. And the suspicion and disgust with which feminine sexuality is viewed by fundamentalists is really unfathomable. For instance, in 2003, religious police in Saudi Arabia forced 15 girls back into a burning building. Their crime? They were trying to escape with their lives uncovered by traditional dress. And for this infraction, they were burned to death.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you know, this level of consciousness still continues today, and it worries me a lot. So,
and we hear it echoed here in the United States as well, with, you know, with the geniuses standing up in Congress, you know, speaking out against birth control and abortion and all of those sorts of things. And I think it would be very good to talk about the state of world feminism in general. How do you see the status of world feminism at this point?
Yeah, wow. Can you believe we're still having this conversation in the 21st century?
Really, really.
Unbelievable. I mean, it just is so unbelievable. I thought by now we'd all have flying cars and we would just be conscious as we could possibly be. And unfortunately, that just hasn't happened. And as the alternate article points out, women around the world are still largely viewed as pawns for the patriarchal masculine to be used for whatever purpose suits them. So just another example that we have here, while Hillary, the opportunity for Hillary Clinton to run for president clearly exists, she has not declared. And we have to ask why, and there are many possibilities. And as you know, Carolyn, I've made the argument that Hillary is the model for the patriarchal feminine,
yes,
where a woman integrates the dominant model of the masculine because it's the only model she has. And I wrote about this in February of 2013 on Collapsing into Consciousness in an article titled Hillary Clinton, the Patriarchal Feminine. And in the U.S., women still earn significantly less than their male counterparts in, you know, doing the same jobs, and that's just white women. For women of color, it's much, much worse. We know that women's rights are under attack in state after state, including not only access to reproductive health care, but also funding for social programs that disproportionately serve and employ women. These attacks harm all women, but women of color are systematically more vulnerable and more affected by them. And, you know, perhaps nowhere is this more starkly evident than in the skyrocketing disparities in income, wealth, and health outcomes between white women and women of color. And while our awareness about women's rights and women's rights are human rights are increasing, we appear to be losing ground and in a more and more totalitarian and oligarchical state where we no longer live in a democracy. That's also true for men. As for women, I don't think we're going to see equality, true equality, until a whole lot more men are feminists, and we're a very long way from that happening.
Well, you know, just incidentally, I'd like to just throw in a kind of an ad lib question here. How do you define feminism?
Well, I define feminism as, really, I think feminism has, for me, has gotten to be a bigger word than just about the feminine. It's really about human rights.
Mm-hmm.
And equality for all people. And it really is the feminist approach that is beginning to wake that up to a lot of people. And so, you know, as we begin to realize what's going on with women, we also see our own frailties and the possibilities of our own problems coming from the same level of consciousness that's fighting feminism and fighting, you know, women having equal rights with men.
Absolutely.
And it's not only here, but it's all over the planet. So, for me, it's becoming a bigger question, and that feminism is really just part of that larger question. And while we obviously need to continue, you know, working for true feminism equality for women, we also need to do that for men, children, and all the vulnerable people in the world as well. They're all tied in together.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you about that in just a moment, but I'd like to take a station break, and we'll be back in just a minute continuing our conversation with Gary Stamper. Welcome back to the Lifeboat Hour. I'm Carolyn Baker, and I'm talking with Gary Stamper, author, healer, and a trusted male friend. Trusted because Gary has developed a deeper understanding and experience of the masculine, as well as a profound respect for women and their empowerment. Later we're going to take calls, but I want to continue the conversation with Gary. So Gary, not many people are writing about this, although I have to some extent, but when any society breaks down, there seems to be gradual or even sudden reversion to primal behaviors. And in addition to an increase in mental illness and suicide, we also see an increase of violence against all of the most vulnerable in any society, women, children, and the elderly. How do you see this playing out in the United States, for example, where women have made so many strides in the past four decades in terms of rights, protections, and a more equal status? Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't pretend that violence is or will be targeted only against women. Men are victimized by violence as well. But if you would go ahead and tackle those questions.
Sure. Patriarchy, of course, is a 6,000-year-old social system in which the role of the male as a primary authority figure is central to the social organization, whether it's a family, a state, a kingdom, whatever. And it implies that the institutions of male rule and privilege are somewhat dependent on female subordination. And patriarchy, in my definition, is the consciousness of greed, the conqueror, and of domination hierarchy. And patriarchy is also the bully, and patriarchy became the dominant social model about 6,000 years ago. And in Alan G. Johnson's book, The Gender Knot, he defines patriarchal social structures as male-dominated, which doesn't mean that all men are powerful, as you said, or all women are powerless, only that the most powerful roles in most sectors of society are held predominantly by men, and the least powerful roles are held predominantly by women. They're also organized around an obsession with control. And men are elevated in the social structure because of their presumed ability to exert control, whether rationally or through violence or the threat of violence. And women are devalued for their supposed lack of control. Women are assumed to need men's supervision, protection, or control. They're also male-identified, and aspects of society and personal attributes that are highly valued are associated with men, while devalued attributes and social activities are generally associated with women. And there is a sense of threat to the social structure of patriarchy when these gendered associations are destabilized. And the response in patriarchy, as we're seeing today, is to increase the level of control, often by exerting control over women, which we're seeing, of course, as well as groups who are devalued by virtue of race, ethnicity, sexuality, or class.
Right.
Patriarchy is also very male-centered. It's taken for granted that the center of attention is the natural place for men and boys, and that women should occupy the margins. And public attention is focused on men. And to test this, just take a look at any daily newspaper. What do you find on the front page about men, about women? When I talk with men's groups and point out that the vast majority of men have also been victims of the patriarchy, it's not unusual for those men, for a lot of those men to come up to me afterwards and thank me for helping lift the guilt burden of the patriarchy off their shoulders. Men have been, we have been, and we continue to be fodder for the canons of the male-dominated aberration. And I use the word aberration on purpose because we now know that for tens of thousands of years, we partnered with the feminine in matrilineal cultures, and it's only been the last 6,000 years or so that the patriarchy has dominated. And patriarchy is a result of what some of us call the original wound of separation.
Yeah.
Now, this is really important, and that's the belief that we're on our own, that we're alone, that we're only responsible for ourselves, where early indigenous peoples knew that they were not separate from one another or the land, the animals, the sky, the universe, that we're all connected, one. And this is what we've lost, and this is what patriarchy has done to us.
And, you know, I was reading this week a quote from Floyd Westerman, the late Floyd Westerman, Native American elder, and he was talking about how in the many of the American tribes, the clan mothers were really in charge of the tribes. And, you know, they laid down the law, and men had to get permission from the clan mothers in order to go to war. So, you know, that's a real different scene. So in this culture, as things break down, I personally see a tremendous amount of violence against everyone, but particularly against women, children, and the elderly. Don't you?
Yes, I do. I definitely do, because they're the weaker aspects, and all the shadow projections of the patriarchy will be projected upon them, and they will suffer for it.
Right.
So I definitely see that.
And in both your work and mine, the damage that patriarchy has done to men as well as women, we talk about that. You were just mentioning that. And I just want to define patriarchy fairly simply. For me, it just means a way of life based on power and control as opposed to sharing and cooperation. Mm-hmm. And you've already mentioned how it, to some extent how it affects men, but I'm wondering if you'd say a little bit more of that, a few specifics.
Well, for men, I mean, as I said, men have been the victims of patriarchy as well throughout history. We've been the cannon fodder for the power elite, and that continues today. We can see that in literally all the wars of the 20th century and pretty much anywhere else. Those wars have turned into resource wars now, but we're still expected to go serve the patriarchal needs. And, you know, one of the tools of the patriarchy is patriotism.
Right.
And I really want to look at patriotism in a bigger context of being patriotic to the planet, of being patriotic for something bigger than empire, something bigger than a government that tries to dominate by fear and force. And we, the United States, unfortunately, we've all come to, it's really hard to ignore the fact that we have become that empire. And it just continues on. It's continuing on right now. It's going on in the Ukraine, and who knows how that's going to play out and what's going to happen. We've seen it in Syria. We've seen it in a lot of different countries, and it continues to go on with the problems that we're having with Russia. The frustration and the panic that we see around the possibility of the collapse of the dollar and the economy, the way everything is going right now. And I don't know if you're aware, but you probably are, but on May 20th, in 2 days, China and Russia are sitting down and they're discussing an agreement where they will build infrastructure to move energy products from Russia into China. And when you're building infrastructure, you're not talking about a one-time thing. You're talking about a paradigm shift in how energy is traded, and it won't be with the dollar.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I expect them to ditch the dollar fairly soon, by the end of this year.
Yeah, I expect that as well, yeah.
Okay, so just briefly, because we need to move on and we're already getting some callers, what do men need to be doing for themselves? What do they need to be doing for the most vulnerable members of society, women, children, and the elderly?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think it's a really important thing. And whenever I talk about this stuff, it's not uncommon for people to turn off and to, to deny that this is going on, to not want to hear it. I had a family member tell me last week when I was in California, I really don't want to hear this. And so I think one of the things that we can do, one of the problems that we have and what we can do about it, is the vast majority of men are resisting their own feminine within.
Right.
And they're completely ignoring that aspect, the aspect of that, of ourselves that we all carry. And integrating the feminine within doesn't mean we become feminized. It means we become whole. Of course, we can't do that in our culture because we're shamed into believing that we're giving up our masculinity and our manhood if we do.
Right.
And that, too, is the wound of separation.
Yes.
Even feminism, a lot of times we'll talk about balancing the masculine and the feminine. And in my view, that's not what we need. We need to integrate both the masculine and the feminine within ourselves, not balance them with equal portions of each.
Right.
We need to integrate the fullness of the feminine with the fullness of the masculine so we're able to move back and forth between the two as each moment arises and as one or the other is needed for a particular situation or a moment. And women need to do the same thing with their masculine. Now, I believe if Hillary Clinton would have allowed her feminine side to come forth in 2008, along with her very strong masculine, she could have very well won the Democratic presidential nomination. If the rest of us can do that, everything else will follow and will automatically be doing what needs to be done for the most vulnerable among us. So until we make that one simple but very difficult change because of our culture, I'm not hopeful about that. This is how we heal that. This is what I believe, and this is why I teach men in my Integral Warrior workshop to integrate their feminine. We spend a whole weekend on integrating the feminine and what is our feminine path to the most, the highest consciousness that we can get to. And then we spend a lot of time reintegrating the healthy masculine. And that's not what we're doing today. We're not integrating the healthy masculine or the healthy feminine. We're integrating the patriarchal parts.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that integration. And, you and I have written extensively about the patriarchal aspects of some women. And my very first book written in 1996 was titled Reclaiming the Dark Feminine. And we both know how important it is for women who are trying to balance their feminine with the masculine, or integrate, rather, their feminine with the masculine, not to follow the model of masculinity in this culture, which you've been talking about. And I also believe that all women in this culture need to deal with the feminine shadow and heal things like the inner bitch, or the inner manipulator. And in addition, even though all women are victimized in this culture in some way, it's very tempting for us to embrace the victim role rather mm-hmm. than move beyond it. So would you say more about a different kind of model for women that isn't forged from patriarchy, but also isn't a reversion to the helpless, powerless, victimized female role?
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I talk about a lot in my work. And, you know, I had a book planned a couple of years ago called, Who is the New Masculine?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the models for the new masculine? And I started looking at actors, at politicians, at business people, at clergy, doctors, all kinds of different things, musicians. And it became evident really quick that there were not very many models for this new masculine.
Right. Right.
And so that's part of the problem. So for women, it's about integrating their inner masculine with their feminine as well as the inner bitch and the manipulator.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that women can be strong when the situation calls for it, but still have their feminine ability to be soft
right.
when it's called for it. And again, when women integrate the masculine, most integrate the only version of the masculine that's been modeled for them, and that's the patriarchy.
Right.
And the culture, unfortunately, won't allow for anything else because, again, we've got this wound of separation that we can't seem to heal. And this is also where men can help change things. By becoming role models of the new masculine for the feminine, and where the catch-22 comes in, men who begin integrating their feminine are often perceived as weak or feminized, often because they are. And
right.
that's because once men who have begun integrating the feminine by being shamed by portions of the feminist movement or other men, they fail to reintegrate the healthy masculine. And who's modeling it for them?
Exactly.
Given enough time, we can probably do it, and therein, you know, lies what I call the second catch-22. Do we have time to do that?
Right, right.
I've come to believe that in the end, it's no longer about if we have the time. It's about whether we have the will to try.
That's exactly right. I really like that.
It's the old journey versus the destination.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter if we have time. We have to make the journey because it's only by quitting that we fail.
I love that. You know, that's one of the many things that we have to do in this time of uncertainty as to whether or not we're going to be here in 50 years, if there's going to be a planet that we can live on in 50 years. And that's part of what I talk about all the time in terms of using the time we have left the most efficiently. So I want to add that one of the most important ways I believe that we can help bridge and heal not only the gender gap, but millions and myriads of other kinds of gaps is through the notion of partnership. You know, Rhianne Eisler talks about it. Mike mentioned Rhianne Eisler quite a bit on this show in the last few shows that he did. And this is a paradigm of looking at a situation, even if it's not a pleasant situation, and seeing how we can partner with it. For example, in terms of near-term extinction, how can I most effectively partner with this phenomenon over which I have very little control in order to serve other beings and become a more compassionate, empowered human being? So that's one piece. And another piece is that as both women and men begin to learn to live more in our hearts than our heads, it's going to make a huge difference in the culture.
Mm-hmm.
The intellect, the rational, is very important, and we can't function without it. But as I've said 1,000 times, it's been disproportionately overemphasized since the Enlightenment, and living only from intellect to the exclusion of our hearts gave birth to the paradigm of industrial civilization and always will give birth to destructive paradigms. That's one reason I do the work that I do, you do the work that you do, and why I'm endeavoring to focus this show on emotional and spiritual resilience. So say what you like about that, Gary.
Oh, wow. I mean, you said it so magnificently well. I agree 100%. And while I also agree that the intellect or the cognitive leads, it's what allows us to make those shifts to understand that our lives aren't working the way they are. And we're certainly in an age of cognitive dissonance right now. I mean, we don't have to look very far around us to see that not very many things around us are working well at all.
Yeah.
Everything's basically kind of falling apart and not working anymore. And the reason I think it's not working anymore is because it's no longer serving us. And so as the patriarchal model begins to seriously collapse, we have to turn back into our hearts instead of our intellect, because there's no way that we can think our way out of this, apparently. I mean, it's thinking, not that I'm not opposed to thinking by any means, I'm not opposed to intellect or the cognitive or to science or anything else, but you know, a lot of this is what got us into this problem in the first time, is our trying to think a better way to do things, to make our lives easier, to the point where we've just so overconsumed on the planet that we're running ourselves right off of it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so we've got to get into our heart, and that's where men really need to focus about getting out of their heads and into their hearts, and what I call the feminine aspect, embracing that, to where they have the same kind of feeling where you're just as good as wiping off your daughter's scraped knee from a bicycle as you are as commanding the boardroom or going to your 9-to-5.
Oh, that's wonderful. I love that. Yeah, anyone who wants to find out more about Gary's work and his books and so forth, GaryStamper.com. We're going to start taking callers. The number is 888-874-4888. And a while ago, we had a caller, Austin from New Jersey. Are you still standing by, Austin?
Yes, I am.
Hi. What is your comment or question?
Hi, Carol and Gary. Thank you for this discussion. It's wonderful what you're touching on here. I wanted to say that I was one of these very hypersensitive little boys, and I was always appalled by the violence. And I grew up in the Vietnam generation. I mean, not a child of that generation, literally as a child. I'm a little on the young side to be a child of that generation. So I saw all the horrors unfold on TV, and just a quick comment about that. You know, there's something to be said. Now, I'm not arguing for censorship, but there was a real horror that we were exposed to, being the first and only really televised war, and the effect that a kid growing up in that had to deal with, being seen that on TV. Again, I'm not arguing for not showing stuff now, but I'm saying there's a separate argument to be had there, not equal moral proportion, but to be looked into. I've always been appalled by the violence, and that the violence specifically perpetrated by men. But when you talk about that as a man, and very often what happens is from women you get this accusatory, well, you're via genitalia, ordinance, whatever, you're part of that group, and then you have to defend yourself on that front. And men become alienated from you because they don't want to. So there's a very easy default Neanderthal that men get to, because it's much easier for a man to not engage this and deal with the conflicts of being part of a gender that commits so much of the violence, yet being appalled by that violence. It's very hard to have a nuanced discussion, because very easy you will get polarized by both genders if you open yourself up to that. So it's a hard road to follow if you want to be open.
Do you have a particular question, or is there anything you'd like Gary or I to address?
Well, I guess the question would be, what would you suggest is the most viable way to deal with that? Because it just seems like it's fighting a war on so many different fronts at one time. How to negotiate that as a man?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Austin. It is fighting a war on many, many fronts. And some of the wars, and all of the wars are... I'm not useful to anybody except for, you know, obtaining resources, and, you know, I want your oil, I want your land, I want your people or whatever. And, you know, there's a couple elements of this that I'll touch on real quick, and one is the cognitive dissonance and horror that you experienced growing up and seeing those scenes on the television in the late 70s, late 60s and 70s that were happening in Vietnam. I remember watching that little girl running, the Vietnamese girl running
with
a fire and things like that, and just how horrible they were. But, you know, one of the reasons I think that we've woken up and that we're waking up today is that we finally got to see the horrors of war from the comforts of our living room, and because most people didn't get to do that. And, for instance, in World War One, you know, we didn't really get to see what was going on, and that was just a horrid, horrid war. And millions of people died in that war, but it wasn't really brought home to us. And now finally we're forced to look at about how awful it is, and hopefully that'll be one of the things that wakes us up when we finally say, this is not acceptable. The other comment I wanted to make is about what you said about women looking at you, you know, because, you know, you're, I don't remember your exact words, but my sense was is because you're not man enough or anything. But I remember in my own life that when I've been seriously projected upon by women, particularly women that have been abused, that I discovered, this was horrible for me, because what I discovered was, is if I was projected upon hard enough as an abuser, that I became an abuser.
Mm-hmm. Well, say more about that, Gary. Can you explain that?
Yeah, well, no, I'm not sure I can.
Okay.
What happened for me was, and this was part of my awakening around women and finally getting to the point where I realized how serious abuse is for women.
Yes.
And how prevalent and rampant it is. And, but this was a woman who had been abused by her family, by all of her relationships and everything. And so when she got into a relationship, she projected that abuse onto every man she was in a relationship with.
Right.
When I met her, she'd been in therapy for 10 years about this and still hadn't even dented it from what I saw. I finally had to step out of the relationship because I found myself reacting in an abusive manner as I was being challenged about being abusive.
Right.
Can I say something quickly?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's all part of the mix. Here's the problem. We mix the historical, the social, the political with the personal and the emotional, intellectual. And trying to discuss those things becomes very difficult because we don't know which voice is talking. We have to understand we can't completely separate one from the other, but we should try to understand and to have an honest discussion and say, well, this is what we're trying to talk about right now in this moment, and understand that nothing exists in a hermetically sealed place, but at the same time, understand that talk about the integral whole, and at the same time focus on specifics when that is necessary too.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, it also points out how imperative it is that men get into their hearts,
mm-hmm.
and that we get out of our heads, and that we open up our hearts, that we're able to open our hearts to compassion, to caring, and that we can step back from that, take a breath, and step back from that, and you know, and if we can't change it, to disengage.
Thank you so much, Austin, for your call.
Thank you.
I want to invite others to give us a call. Right. 888-874-4888. I'm sorry about the confusion there. 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from some women as well. So one of the things that he was mentioning, Gary, was the trauma of seeing the war in our living rooms during the Vietnam era. And I certainly remember that well, and I know that that was traumatic for a lot of people. At the same time, it woke up a lot of people.
Absolutely.
It really made people stop and think, what the hell are we doing over there? And mm-hmm. So I think there's a fine line between seeing too much that might traumatize us and the reality that we need to be awakened. You know, mm-hmm. I saw something today online about in some university they're going to be putting little warning stickers on textbooks. You know, this could contain disturbing material, you know. And I'm thinking of, you know, when I taught history. And, you know, that you probably could have put on my syllabus, the whole damn thing was disturbing material because I was really putting our history and our culture under a microscope. So there's that fine line between, yeah, some things could be really upsetting, and on the other hand, sometimes we need to be upset.
Absolutely. We do. And the power of that and the power of, you know, seeing what happened in the 1970s is one of the reasons why when we were in Iraq that the government would refuse to allow television to show the bodies of fallen Americans coming back.
Right.
They would not let us see that. And the reason they didn't want us to see that is because they did not want us to wake up to what was going on there.
And also, as we've talked about before in this show, and you and I have talked about, you know, we live in this flatline culture where we're not supposed to feel much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is supposed to be too controversial, and, you know, we're just supposed to kind of go along in this non-feeling state, in the state of psychic numbing. And so sometimes we need to get our cages rattled.
We do. We do indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, that's, you know, our getting our cages rattled, as you eloquently put it, is really the basis for all the shifts in consciousness that we've ever experienced. That something happens that doesn't make sense to us, that disrupts our old belief systems, that causes us to step away from our old belief systems and allows new thinking to emerge. Because happy people don't change. Why would they?
I love it. Happy people don't change. That's one for the books, Gary. Love it. Yeah, anybody have any questions or comments for us? You know, I know you're probably enjoying listening to our conversation, but yeah, we hope that we're stirring the pot and we can get some people to call in, ask questions, make comments. This is you know, the stuff that we're talking about here is hard stuff. It's you know, it's challenging stuff. And one of the things I was wondering about is, Gary, if you would say a little bit more about the process that you see, not all men, because nobody's, not everyone is the same, but the general process that you see men going through to get into their hearts, to really integrate the feminine.
Well, Betsy, there's a very long explanation about that using David Data's model of first, second, and third states masculine. But generally, it's the result of, again, men having, well, men and women, because that's women change as well, obviously. Sometimes, often, I mean, I think today more faster than men are. And I think right now in spirituality, women are definitely leading the way in spirituality and consciousness change today. And that's a good thing because, you know, maybe the goddess and the love of the planet and the indigenous heart that holds the planet and Gaia sacred is desperately needed at this point because, you know, we've raped and pillaged her until she's about to say, get off. So what I see happening is that at a specific level of consciousness, and let's just use the first stage level of consciousness as used in Western civilization, as the man who is about acquiring things, about acquisition, it's about power, it's about being in control, it's about having the biggest toys, it's about the bumper sticker that says he who dies with the most toys wins. And I don't know why, but it never made sense to me. Excuse me, I died. I can't take my toys with me. So what difference does it make? At some point, some men, for some reason, get to a place, and women too, get to, and that's where the bitch and the manipulator live as well in first stage feminine.
Right.
And at some point, men and women both. Some men and women get to a place where they realize that in spite of everything that they've had, the houses, the cars, the women, the men, the fame, the power, the money, all of that stuff, they're still not happy.
Right.
So what is it that makes some men and women get to the place where they say, this isn't working for me anymore, what do I need to do? And I don't really know the answer to that, and I don't know anybody who's addressed that, but something seems to happen where some people get that feeling where they're no longer happy, even though they have all the toys, that they've done everything they were supposed to do, and that they were told that this is going to make you happy, and it isn't working.
Yeah, and
so they start looking around for something else. And they don't know what it is, they don't know what's happening or anything like that, but in our culture, what happens is that men begin to look for another way to be, and the way they, what they find is generally the feminine. And that starts moving them, they start integrating the feminine, the softer side, the more caring side, they start opening their hearts. They start opening their minds to other possibilities, and suddenly they start, without even knowing about it many times, they start integrating their feminine aspects.
Yeah, and you know, I think grief plays a really important role in that. You know, I'm talking a lot about grief in my work, and certainly it's all around us in terms of the loss of species and the loss of living beings on this planet and what we're doing to it and what it's doing to us to do what we're doing to the planet. And so when we open our hearts to really feeling this loss, I think there's a softening for all of us. And I see women, needing to open their hearts as well.
Yes.
And become what they do, what they naturally do, which is really deeply connect with the earth. Really deeply connect with the earth. And then I think, you know, when you begin to do that, you will automatically begin to experience a different model of female empowerment, which is not the model of the patriarchal woman, you know. Frankly, you know, I can't imagine that any woman who's not following a patriarchal model would ever get nominated for president, let alone, win.
Right.
I mean, that's just how it is.
Yes.
And so women's empowerment has been confused with the patriarchal model, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I agree with that wholeheartedly. Absolutely, yeah. And that's a shame because it doesn't take a lot of thinking to realize that there's many, many different types of empowerment. And, you know, what one of the things that I work with, both when I work with men and women, is moving from power to empowerment.
Say more about that. That's really fascinating.
Clearing out the confusion that exists between the acquisition of power and being empowered. So it's a matter of really digging down deep and realizing, again, as the first stage masculine and feminine realize when their lives still don't seem to make sense to them or aren't bringing them happiness, that they start looking around for something else. So they realize that the power that they've held by their money, by their jobs, by whatever it is that they're no longer happy with, isn't fulfilling them, and so they look for other ways to start empowering themselves. And what happens as men and women move into second stage masculine and feminine, men begin to integrate their feminine side, and women begin to integrate their masculine side. So, but unfortunately for men, what most men do at second stage is that they tend to soften, and they tend to, because of the shame that's thrust upon us by a lot of women and by the women's movement to a large degree, men are bad, right? So not all women are saying that, but, you know, that was a real strong voice in the 70s and 80s.
Right.
That, you know, they're bad. And so men gave up that. They renounced and rejected their own masculinity in favor of the feminine, and that's why they became over-feminized. And you hear right-wing radio and conservative talk show hosts talking about, you know, these over-feminized men and what's wrong with them and everything. But it's not until men and women begin to reintegrate, women begin to reintegrate the healthy masculine, which hopefully is being modeled for them, and men begin to reintegrate the healthy masculine, which hopefully is being modeled for them, and that's what my wife Anya's and my work is all about. That's what we do with our men's and women's groups, is we help them reintegrate, you know, get a good handle on their oppositional, whether it's the masculine or the feminine, and then get a good, healthy handle on their primary gender. You know, their sexual essence, whatever that might be. And it's not the same for men and women all the time. You know, so it starts getting very complex. But when men start moving into what David Data calls third stage masculine, because the masculine search is for freedom, whether it's through acquisition, whether it's through integrating their feminine, or whether it's moving to third stage. And instead, once men begin to move into third stage masculine, they no longer search for freedom. They become freedom.
Wow. I like that. I really like that.
Me too.
It sounds like the training that you and Anya are doing is really good training for preparation for a society where you have this breakdown and chaos, which, you know, you and I both believe is gonna take place as these systems continue to unwind, and there's gonna be more violence.
Yes. Yeah. And likewise, when the feminine begins to move from integrating her masculine into third stage feminine, and the feminine search is that of love. The feminine search is all about love. And this is generally, you know, we're not talking about gender here. We're talking about feminine and masculine qualities, of course. But when third stage feminine begins to emerge, feminine stops looking for love and becomes love.
Oh, that's beautiful. That is really, really beautiful.
No, there's not. I don't agree with everything David Davis says, but his model of this move in Western culture from first through first, second, and third stage mass on is just absolutely beautiful. It's just absolutely beautiful. And contains one of the keys to moving through everything.
And, you know, as you're talking about that, I think it's really important in everything that we're doing these days, you know, workshops, conferences, you know, radio show, everything that we do, whatever we're doing as we navigate what's going on in this planet, is that we move away from these patriarchal models and more into partnering models. Mm-hmm. And any kind of model or activity that will facilitate connection, that will facilitate relationship.
Yes, and as you said, you know, there are very few things that will do that more than facing grief.
Yeah, exactly.
So much. And that's why I love one of the reasons I love your work is because of the grief work you do and how much I love that. And, you know, it's what I'm also moving into doing more grief work. And even in the community where we live, we now have a grief circle that meets twice a month.
And how's that going? Can you tell us about that?
Well, there's been one meeting.
Uh-huh.
And I wasn't at it because I was traveling at the time.
Uh-huh.
But there were 13 people who went to the first one, and from what I understand, it was just absolutely wonderful. It was able to open people's hearts, and I'm going to be going to the next one on the 27th. So looking forward to that and seeing what that is. We have a woman here in the Cove who has been through grief training and has done the work, and she's been facilitating, and I understand she's doing a wonderful job with it.
And, you know, I've been interested to read some of the things that Guy McPherson has published lately about his experience with grief training and now facilitating a grief recovery workshop himself, I believe in Ecuador. And in that group that you and Anya are involved with, what is your hope or what is your longing for what will come out of that group?
Well, I think ultimately, for me, the ultimate longing is to be able to, two things. One is to be able to deal with loss, deep loss, because we're all going to, if you're paying attention, you're already dealing with deep loss on a daily basis.
Yes.
So that becomes really important to be able to hold that and without falling apart, but with being able to honor it. But it's also about connecting with one another. About deepening our connections, about deepening who we are together and how we live our lives.
I absolutely love that because that is accomplishing not only the shedding of our grief and sharing it, but we're building community by doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And if there's going to be any hope for us at all, I think it's going to reside in local community. And much to my chagrin and my dismay, I've had some really good successes with community. I've also had some huge failures with community. Community is hard.
Especially in a culture where we have been taught to be as individualized as we are.
Absolutely, yeah. And so I've been often saying for the last couple of years, I've been saying that I don't, in many ways, let's face it, most of the intentional communities, 98% of intentional communities fail. They don't work. And one of the reasons I think they don't work is they won't work until they have to.
Well, not only that, but I think it is this deep sharing of emotion and deep grieving that really brings people together on a much more profound level than just, you know, well, we're going to plant gardens together and we're going to figure out how to do the chores together. It's going into a place of sorrow and sharing that with each other and becoming really, really genuine. I think that bonds us together, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've done a few of Maladoma Somme's work, and I've done it with you as well, and those are powerful experiences that really open your heart.
They do, and there's something you take away from those that you take back to your community. And, of course, the number one thing that I hear in life coaching when people contact me is, I am so lonely, I know all this stuff, I feel all this stuff, and I have no one to talk to about it. And so, you know, I try to provide resources for people. I try to hook people up with organizations and communities where they won't be so alone. But it's really, really challenging. And I never cease to be amazed at how hungry, famished, in fact, people are for connection.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it's getting more true. I don't think it's completely true yet, but I think it's becoming more and more true as we realize that our rugged individualism just isn't getting us there.
Absolutely. And as we also realize that, you know, it's not just the other species that are going away. We're going away.
That's a distinct possibility. Yes, it is.
Yeah. Wow. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share with our audience tonight before we finish up? I've just really enjoyed having you on the show and having this very rich and juicy conversation about men and women, masculine and feminine.
Me too. Yeah, I can never get enough of this. So, you know, I guess the thing that I would leave everybody with right now is, you know, another quality of the masculine is to protect the feminine. And in the case of a man, to protect both the feminine contained within himself and within women. And a natural extension of that is that the masculine also protects those who are powerless and cannot protect themselves. And, you know, that's going to require, that may require some really hard choices in whatever time we may have left. And, you know, these could be choices that involve considering what constitutes the least amount of suffering for others and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in these scenarios will, you know, might require that we maintain the ultimate compassion for ourselves and those we serve, our communities, our partners, our loved ones, and even our animals. And how do we get through that? You know, it's and it's one thing to talk about protecting others, but it requires a little more nuance when we talk about protecting the feminine within, our own feminine within for us men. And that means not hardening our hearts, regardless of what's going on around us. And that may be the major task that we might be facing.
I believe that is the major task that all of us, men and women, will be facing.
Yeah.
So I want to really, really thank you for being on the show tonight, Gary. It's always a pleasure to have you on here. If you want to get in touch with Gary, he's at GaryStamper.com and also at AwakeningTheNewMasculine.com. Good luck to you and your work, Gary. Take care, you and Anya. Blessings on the work that you do, and I look forward to having you back in the near future.
Oh, I would love that, Carolyn. Thank you so much. Thank you for having me tonight.
You're very welcome, and thank you all for joining us tonight on the Lifeboat Hour. Have a wonderful week, and let's be resilient.
Old Black Joe's still picking cotton for your ribbons and bows.